when they bought it, they were renovating and then found like 40 bottles of moonshine.
Oh my God.
Like arranged in the walls. Mm-hmm. And I felt like the LA Confidential elements of it rise up.
I know.
Into things.
So cool. I mean, that sounds like a...
Hello and welcome to Rebel, a collection of Rom's comedies, dramedies, and rom-com oddities. My name is Rhoda, and I'm here with my co-host Nicole, the producer of Elixir.
Be sure to stick around after the show to hear Rhoda and I chat about family betrayal and our own links to the U.S. Prohibition.
We'll be right back just after this.
Hello. I wanted to take a moment to thank you for listening, and also to explain why you might hear ads like this before, during, or even after an episode. We're a small but mighty team here at Realm, and to help fund our shows, we promote products or services that we think you'd enjoy from a variety of sponsors. If any of our ads interest you, one of the best ways to support us is by visiting the link or using the promo code in the ad. It's pretty much a win-win since you can get some great deals and we can keep making awesome shows like this one. You can also visit realm.fm/partners for more information about our sponsors and how to access the different promotions. Thanks again for joining us in our corner of the universe. Listen away.
Hello, I'm Alison Larkin, writer, comedian, narrator, and host of the Jane Austen podcast. Join me as we embark on a journey through Austen's timeless stories, starting with Pride and Prejudice. The Jane Austen podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
JJ woke in an unfamiliar room. Vera's laboratory. For a moment, their heads swam. Then they remembered. The club. They'd lost it. No. JJ had not lost judging your cover. It had been stolen by the dirtiest, no-good scumbag in all of Locke. They could not believe they'd harbored a crush on Harlow Jones back in his boxing days. Blech. JJ levered themselves off the cot. They frowned, first at the fading daylight, then at the room. Where had all the cousins gone? JJ squinted at a crate of leather-bound books. The famous Reeves family recipes. Surely Vera wouldn't begrudge a friend one little peek. JJ picked up the nearest volume just as a voice drifted up the stairwell.
Better be worth my while, Reeves, or there's no deal.
Harlow, what was that rat doing here?
I promise it's all there, answered Rolf, Vera's business partner.
Pulse racing, JJ dug through their pockets. They kept a glamour flask handy at all times. It was in their jacket. They snagged the coat and dove behind a bookshelf just as the men entered. Through a crack in the shelf, JJ watched Harlow Jones strut into the lab like he owned it. JJ took a swig of their elixir and blended into the wall.
Realm presents Elixir. Episode 8.
Rolf! Vera's voice echoed across the high-ceiling bar. She took one step down the spiral staircase.
What's going on?
Harlow jumped off the stage, sauntered toward her.
Don't blame your cuz too much. It's easier for everyone this way. We all get what we want.
Strangers opened their hidden panels and side doors. A man upended a crate on the stage. The recipe books. Rolf had given Harlow everything.
I'm going to be sick.
Vera reached the bottom of the steps at the same time Harlow did. She raised her chin. You're nothing but a vulture.
Let's be honest, Vera. You were going to lose the bar regardless.
He pointed at two men near the staff entrance. Men in iron shoe uniforms.
You were next on the captain's raid tour. It would have been a terrible waste to watch your family history go up in smoke. This way, thanks to your cuz, the bar survives.
If she punched Harlow, how long would it take the nearest goon to tackle her?
Don't worry. I even paid for the privilege. Rolf can set up somewhere new. I hear Quell is nice this time of year.
Vera trembled. Red edged her vision.
Vera.
Rolf approached, hands extended toward her.
It's over. Let it go.
First Elsie's betrayal, now this?
How could you? What would Dad say if he could see you now? Do you even care? Of course I care.
I did this to save you, Vera. Because you're too mule-headed to call it quits. You were going to end up in a cell right alongside Henrik, and I couldn't let that happen. She bristled.
Oh, so you stabbed me in the back, and you style yourself a hero for it. I never wanted this. Bullshit. You've been begging me to sell for months.
Harlow clapped his hands. She rounded on him.
Tell me why, Harlow. Why go to all these lengths just to get my recipes? It can't all be about money.
He clicked his tongue.
This is why your bar has been bleeding patronage for years, Vera. Truthfully, your elixirs are better than mine. What you don't understand is desire. People don't come to a hush bar for safety. They come because they want a taste of true power. And if it leaves them craving more, all the better. Because that's what people expect power to do. People die from bad batches, she hissed. How could he be so cavalier? They get sick, or they become so desperate they'll sacrifice everything for one more taste. And since I now have a monopoly on the supply, those desperate patrons will pay whatever price I set. This is introductory level business strategy, my dear.
At least Rolf had the grace to look nauseated. Vera bared her teeth.
Rot in hell, Harlow. Actually, that's what you'll be doing.
Harlow snapped his fingers. The two iron shoes she'd glimpsed earlier appeared at her shoulder. Panicked, Vera grabbed her vial of elixir, but the iron shoes were faster. Too fast.
They're on speed elixirs.
One snatched the vial. The other grabbed Vera's arm and wrenched it behind her back.
What are you doing?
Rolf rounded on Harlow, fists raised. Before he could move, the second iron shoe caught his arm in a similar hold.
This wasn't part of the deal.
Then Harlow was there, in front of her, drawing a flask from his pocket. She recognized it from her laboratory. A sleep elixir. Vera kicked Harlow's shin. Over Harlow's shoulder, Rolf struggled in his iron shoe's grip.
You bastard! You guaranteed her safety!
Harlow grinned.
Guess I lied.
He wrenched her mouth open, tipped the vial down her throat. She gagged, but the iron shoe pinned her upright, and Harlow held her chin. The last thing Vera saw, strangely, was a face. It appeared in mid-air, bodiless, just over Harlow's left shoulder. JJ? Then sleep grabbed Vera's ankles and dragged her into its depths.
If Elsie had harbored any illusions that her parents' arrival at the reformist headquarters shortly after hers was mere coincidence, Mama dispelled them as soon as their carriage jerked into motion. Thank you for finding your sister, Elsabeth, dear. They must have followed her to Lou. But how? Guilt washed over Elsie. She'd ruined everything. She'd lied to Vera. Now she'd betrayed Lou, too. Elsie nudged her sister's foot. Lou looked up, her face carefully blank. It unsettled Elsie more than a scowl would have. Her hand drifted to her neck. The onyx vial of Cural felt warm near her chest. But the warmth became an ache when Elsie recalled that night in the laboratory, brewing this elixir. Or the next night, her body entwined with Vera's. Vera wanted nothing to do with her anymore. they pulled up to the manor in stony silence. It was not the triumphant homecoming Elsie had envisioned. Mama gestured over her shoulder.
Gunnar, would you see the girls to their rooms?
No use resisting. Gunnar's thighs alone were thicker than her torso. Elsie followed him, resigned. The whole way upstairs, she tried to catch Lou's eye, but Lou didn't raise her gaze. Not until they reached Elsie's bedchamber. Finally, Lou looked up.
Don't drink anything.
With that mystifying advice, Elsie was left alone in her bedroom, latch bolted from the outside. She stared at the bed, the fluffy comforter and cushioned mattress she had missed so dearly. Elsie would give all this decadence up for one moment with Vera. There were so many things she should have said. She strode to her balcony, wrenched its handle. Locked, of course. Her parents had probably redoubled security after their daughter's disappearances. She was about to fling herself dramatically into a pile of pillows when movement on the lawn below caught her eye. Odd. Her bedroom faced the back of the manor, the stables, the ball courts, her mother's strolling gardens. Yet someone was trotting across the greens on horseback. The horse wheeled to a stop at the servant's entrance. Why would a visitor ride up to it?
Unless they don't want to be seen coming in the front.
Elsie's pulse picked up. The man, at least she assumed a man based on sheer size, dismounted. Both his and the horse's breath came in steaming clouds. Wherever they'd ridden from, they had done it in a hurry. The man knocked on the servant's door. There was something familiar about him. A moment later, the bulb over the entrance flicked on. The man's hat concealed his face, but she recognized Papa immediately. The man handed something to her father, a small parcel wrapped in brown paper. Her father tucked it into his coat and went back inside. Before he departed, the man looked up to scan the windows of the house. As he did, a light caught his face. Elsie gasped and stumbled away from the window, heart pounding. It was Harlow.
Hey everybody, it's Kaylin at Revel, and I want to tell you about Green Chef. With curated market items to support clean eating, Green Chef is convenient and healthy. They use fresh, organic foods, as well as 100% sustainably sourced seafood and antibiotic and hormone-free chicken. And they have vegan and keto and lots of other options for you too. Green Chef can help you save time in the kitchen with dinners that take 30 minutes and lunches that take 10. I love Green Chef because it takes the guesswork out of eating healthy, so I can focus on other things that I really care about, like going to the park with my dog or playing music. So if you want to free up more time to do things that you love, go to greenchef.com/revel50 to get 50% off plus 20% off the next 2 months. That's greenchef.com/revel50 to get 50% off plus 20% off the next 2 months.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
She woke on a hard stone floor. She felt bruises forming on her hip, her shoulder. She rubbed at her side and struggled upright to take stock of her surroundings. She was in a barred cell. Iron. Of course. The only light came from a torch flickering outside the cell, which smelled like it ran on fish oil. There was another cell across the way, the mirror of her own, but it was too dark to determine if it was occupied. This did not look like the holding cell of the jail, where she'd gone to buy JJ's temporary freedom. That hadn't been a palace either, but at least it was clean. She squeezed her eyes shut, pictured Rolf's stricken expression when the iron shoes had seized her. She'd told him not to trust Harlow. Behind that betrayal lurked another. Elsie, tears shining in those blue eyes. "Let me explain." Now she never could. If nothing else, at least that was a relief. Vera didn't think she could stand to see Elsie again. It would only remind her how blind she'd been, how selfish. A shuffling sound made her lift her head, worried about mice. Instead, she saw motion in the cell across the hall. Vera stood. "Hey." The figure shuffled closer to the bars. She did the same. "Do you know where we are?" Vera whispered. She didn't want to alert any guards. The figure raised its head. The face was unfamiliar. Gaunt, with hollows for eyes, hair and beard matted into ugly lumps. But when he spoke, Vera inhaled sharply. She would know that voice anywhere.
"We are in the very last place I ever wanted to see you, daughter."
In protest, Elsie wore pajamas to dinner. The Duchess grimaced when she entered the dining room, which was rewarding. Lou, still wearing that terrible blank expression, settled into her usual seat across from Elsie. Elsie glared daggers at her father's empty chair until the Duke of Thornley finally graced him with his presence. Mama clasped her hands. "Isn't this nice? All of us together again." Elsie smiled, all teeth. She waited for her father to pick up his fork. Then, while he was chewing, Elsie leaned over. "Did you have a nice chat with Harlow, Papa?" He choked so hard his face purpled. Across the table, Lou straightened. She didn't look surprised, just slightly more animated. "Elsabet, no business talk at the table." Mama frowned at the Duke.
"Oh, so it was business. Did you buy something from him, Papa? He gave you a package."
"Elsabet," Mama warned. That finally roused Lou.
"Your husband is consorting with the peddler of the most dangerous elixirs in Locke. And your concern is for proper dinner etiquette? That's enough, both of you."
Elsie pointed at their father.
"What about him? I want to know why my father is doing business with an apothecary, if you can even call Harlow that, when he argued to ban elixirs in the first place."
Mama picked up her knife and fork and attacked her steak with rather more enthusiasm than strictly necessary.
Your father does not answer to you. He is the head of this household.
The Duke arched an eyebrow.
Am I?
This is hardly the time, Johannes. Lou looked between them. On the contrary, I think it's long past time you both explain how you could betray everything you stand for.
Her sister smiled, completely devoid of humor.
Our parents, the esteemed Duke and Duchess Thordley, have been working with Harlow for years. Where do you think he got the coin to buy all those other hush bars? Or to bribe his way into the Iron Shoe Captain's pocket?
Dread, slick like sweat, coated Elsie's skin.
But we, you, hate elixirs. You always said your goal was to rid Locke of elixirs entirely.
Neither parent responded. They were carrying on an unspoken argument, conducted entirely in head tilts and narrowed eyes.
What our parents say and what our parents do are two very different things.
Lou leaned across the table toward Elsie.
The ban was just an excuse to get all the competition out of the way. Remember what happened with Mama's parents' silk company? Do not talk about things you do not understand, Louise.
Mama gestured angrily at a servant to fetch another tray of beverages, as if this were a normal dinner. Elsie's mind raced.
They saved up enough coin to operate at a loss, then lowered the price of their own silks. Everyone began to buy only their products. Their competitors dropped their prices too to compete, but no one else had saved up a nest egg, so one by one the other merchants went out of business.
Lou nodded grimly.
And once every other competing silk company went under, our grandparents were able to sell for however much they pleased.
But the council created an anti-monopoly law, right? Elsie asked.
So no one else could ever do that again.
Lou tapped her nose.
No one with a legal business, at least.
Elsie's stomach dropped. She thought about JJ and their wondrous club, about Vera and her family, and the elixirs Elsie had seen make people laugh, feel young again, fly. Her parents wanted all the other apothecaries out of business just so Harlow could dominate. So Thornley's could dominate.
Mama, tell me it's not true.
Carlotta Thornley took a long sip of wine. Elsie spun to her father instead.
Did you really give Harlow all that money?
Enough. Papa stood, chair screeching.
Gutter?
The bodyguard materialized. The other servant, the one Mama had sent off, returned with a tray of flute glasses Elsie had never seen before. Lou went pale. She reached for her steak knife, but Gunnar got there first. The flute glasses glittered. Not glass, Elsie realized. Quartz. Papa handed something to Gunnar. It was the package he'd gotten from Harlow. Finally, Papa looked at his daughters for the first time all evening.
You're both overwrought. It's understandable, given what you've been through.
Gunnar unwrapped the package. A transparent quartz bottle rolled free. Inside, black liquid crawled up its sides, slow as molasses. Elsie recognized it. The night after the dam, when she helped Vera in the laboratory, Vera had shown it to her. Memory elixir.
A spoonful can cleanse a terrible memory. A full glass, and you'll forget your own name.
This is a tonic. It will settle your nerves.
The sisters looked at one another, at the barricaded doors. Gunnar poured a few spoonfuls of the syrupy elixir into one glass. The maid brought it to Elsie. Gunnar spooned even more into Lou's flute. Papa folded his arms, the way he used to when waiting for them to finish eating as children. Mama shaded her forehead with one palm, eyes on her plate. But she clearly wasn't going to intervene, either. Lou tried to rise, but Gunnar clapped a heavy hand on her shoulder, forced her back into her seat. Elsie met her sister's gaze, willed herself to be right.
I apologize, Papa. You're right. We're overcome from stress, and we aren't thinking clearly. We'll drink your tonic, and then Lou and I will retire to my room to recover together.
Lou, Elsie said softly.
All's Jake.
She raised the cup to her lips and swallowed the whole dose in one go.
Hi, all. Thank you for sticking around to hear Rhoda and I chat all about episode 8. My name is Nicole, and I am very thrown right now. We finally found out the truth about the Thornleys. More importantly, Elsie has finally found out the truth, considering she was the only one in her family, which has got to be a lonely feeling.
God, the betrayal.
Oh, yeah. And not only did Vera lose her bar, her cousin's decision and betrayal led to that, and now she's imprisoned with her father. So we're at a real low for our leading ladies here right now.
Yeah, yeah. Not a great spot. Okay, we talked last week about little sister energy and being left out of things, but this is like to a new level. You know what I mean? This is like collusion against one person in the family to like actively lead them out of the truth, for their protection or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I think that both of them are kind of experiencing different feelings of being betrayed and like questioning what has happened and led up to this, which I think is a really, really nice moment for them. It makes for good drama. I feel bad for them, honestly.
I feel bad for them, too. I also like that we get to see the razor sharp kind of evil mind of Carlotta, Elsie's mother. And it goes more into economics is the driest way to put it. But like the idea and the function of prohibition and like creating the scarcity to then have a monopoly. And it made me think a lot about, you know.
But I agree with you that I don't think it's dry, in fact, to talk about the economics of it and kind of control and substance and essentially how it benefits a lot of powerful people to keep it illegal. So I live in Los Angeles, and I was in a friend's house in Eagle Rock and was looking at her bar and whatever. And there was a terrifying clear bottle of moonshine mm-hmm. with a faded label that was practically gone. And she is in film, so I just thought it was a prop. And she's like, no, this is from the 20s. And she had shown me her fireplace and how when they bought it, they were renovating and then found like 40 bottles of moonshine. arranged in the walls. And I felt like the LA Confidential elements of it rise.
Mm-hmm. I know
things. And yeah.
It's so cool. I mean, that sounds like you could do an investigation into like what those people were doing there at that time and uncover so many interesting factoids. I mean, living in New York, the big thing here is the speakeasy bar and the fun of that, of going to like a doorway and then it looks unassuming and then it leads to this incredible interior. But my prohibition anecdote is that my Nana was alive during the prohibition and her mother became—I almost said like a brewer, but her mother basically made alcohol during the prohibition. And then my Nana smuggled it under her skirt. She used to, like, put the bottles under her skirt and
like,
do drops.
Did she have, like garter it to herself, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, she was really young. She was born in 17 or 20.
Wow.
1917 or 1920. Yeah. So I mean, I think that it was, the mother was now a single mother of 7 children. Because of a loss. And so she was like doing what she can to make money. I'm very proud of this. I think that's incredible.
That's kind of badass that's like in your lineage. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes. Enterprising ladies, you know, because for listeners, I am of the opinion that prohibition was a bad thing. And it used like morality and ethics as a cover for a lot of other interests. And, I think, you know, many people believe that, too. So it's cool to have a family history of people who were sneaking around the system. Little Veras, if you will.
I want to see a picture of her like at that in that era.
I know.
You know what I mean? With her
in
like
that age.
Like little skirt, like kind of what do you think? Like, was she 5, 7? Like, how old are we talking?
I think she was like 10 or something, 10 to 15. I should have, you know what I should have done? I should have fact checked all of this with my mom. Not the broad strokes of it, but like the detailed elements of it, you know, to learn more about it.
Well, next time I have a drink, I will toast your name.
For sure. For sure.
Okay, well.
This was lovely as always, Rhoda. Very worried for our ladies, but we'll see how they do in episode 9. Thank you so much for joining me, and thank you for listening.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, you can find more shows like this on Apple, on Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Revel is produced by Nicole Kreuter and Kaylin West. Associate produced by Devin Shepherd. Executive produced by Molly Barton and Julian Yap. Audio editing by Kaylin West and Sam Bagala. Theme music by Hashem Asadolahi. Featuring performances by Hashem Asadolahi, Josiah Lamb, Alan Ferber, and Mike Forzano. Theme music mixed by Justin Morell. This season of Revel is hosted by Rhoda Baeza and Nicole Otto. You're listening to Revel, Elixir. Created and produced by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Elixir is written by Ellen Goodlett and performed by Keeler Lee, Marin Miller, and Ava Mag. Produced by Nicole Otto. Executive produced by Molly Barton. Audio editing, sound design, and theme music by Amanda Rose Smith.